From the rail to your radio, this is the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Anybody's horse race, summing along the rail, has the lead. Sport and Life, Classic Go-Go, past the tab, all closing in. In deep stretch, summing is doggedly holding on to the lead. Summing wins the Pennsylvania Derby by a length and a half.
But Songbird comes off the turn, and the champ has taken command. At the eighth hole, Songbird begins to stride away. Karina Mia second, Catherine Sophia laboring back in third. Here she is, folks. Just a magnificent blend of grace and power as she comes to the finish. Songbird, a picture of perfection.
Welcome to the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment.
Aztec sends for the lead. Rich Daddy threw on the fence to try to kick with him down the center and race me home. Zulu is next. In deep stretch, it's Aztec sends for the lead. Rich Daddy takes another run at him. Aztec sends Rich Daddy. It's Aztec sends in the jewel.
World Approval has the lead as they come down to the wire. He's pulling away late. And World Approval does it in the Breeders' Cup Mile. World Approval won it by a length and a half. A blanket photo behind him in a final time of 1 minute 34.55 seconds.
Now, here's Mike Penna.
Welcome back. Hour three rolling on. Very busy edition of the Equine Forum. Boy, we covered a lot of ground this morning. Happy to have you back with me. Want to update you on the poll question, considering the fact that this is Pennsylvania Derby Day. I threw this one out there. Who wins today's Pennsylvania Derby? Going to keep it really simple. Hot Rod Charlie, Midnight Bourbon, or Other? And if you choose the Other category, just let me know who you think is going to pull off a bit of an upset. Because let's face it, Hot Rod Charlie, Midnight Bourbon are going to take most of the money. So far, 70% of you saying it's Hot Rod Charlie that's going to win that Pennsylvania Derby today and earn his first career grade one. Told you earlier in the program, right before I visited with one of his owners, Patrick O'Neill. Sitting here at this time last year, we didn't even know who Hot Rod Charlie was. He hadn't even won a race yet. He hadn't even broken his maiden. He didn't do that until early October before finishing second at 90-41 in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile at Keeneland last year, behind, of course, Champion Essential Quality. Keep those votes coming. I'll try to pass them along. You can weigh in at HRRN on Twitter, Horse Racing Radio Network on Facebook, or email the show, mike@horseracingradio.net. You can email me your thoughts on the poll question or any other thoughts on today's show. Go ahead and hit me up with that, mike@horseracingradio.net. All right, time now for In the Room with Sean Clancy. This is a special replay of Sean's one-on-one conversation with retired jockey Robbie Davis. It was fantastic, too good not to bring your way again. Here it is, In the Room with Sean Clancy.
This is In the Room with Sean Clancy.
I'm Sean Clancy, and I'm in the room with retired jockey Robbie Davis here at Saratoga. What's it like training your own string here at Saratoga? Still at it. I'm still going around there every morning.
Yeah, it's a job, I tell you. You know, it's an uphill battle here at Saratoga. You got to have the right stock. And we're kind of in between the right stock and Finger Lake stock. So, but we keep swinging.
You're here with your son Eddie Davis in a little barn, kind of behind the paddock. Your wife's here working. It's a family affair, I guess.
Yeah, it's great. It's what we do. You know, we have three kids, are jockeys, and Eddie started training. He wanted to claim horses, so I helped him get a couple owners, and he's doing a good job with that. And I just couldn't put myself up to claiming horses for guys that I'd rode for 20 years and owners and stuff. So plus my son rides and it just don't look good. So, but Eddie's doing a good job with it and, you know, rightfully so.
Did you ever try to talk any of these kids out of getting in the horse business, or are you talking them into it?
Oh, it's funny. I directed them all to school and I directed them away from it. And they all end up coming. As soon as the last one graduated high school, I started training. That was Dylan. And he didn't know what he was going to do. And he decided he wanted to be a jockey after the last day of the meet on Labor Day. And so I went home and I said, now, Dylan, you know, this takes a commitment of 5 years. You know, you just don't become a jockey overnight. I mean, I know you race these dirt bikes and everything, but you got to do the right thing. I'm going to send you over to Chris McCarron's jockey school. So we went upstairs and put his boot, my boots on, old boots and old pants and some silks and a helmet. And I'll be damned, it fit just perfect. And so he says, well, Dad, how do I look? I said, you look great, but let's get the saddle out. We're going to tack up the pony out here in the paddock. And, well, Dad, you know, I don't know. I said, just get on. Let's see how you feel in these silks on this saddle, this little jock saddle. And we legged him up and had a couple of friends hanging around watching. It was like, Rob, are you sure? Are you sure? And he's leaning like he's on a dirt bike trying to turn left and right. I was like, no, Dylan, you got to use the reins to turn, you know. And then the horse went into the running shed, and we're all standing there like, oh, no, oh, no. And then he came out, and he was still on. We're like, yeah! And we were all surprised. So we called McCarran and Chris. I said, Chris, you got another one to leg up over here. I says, I can't get them out of bed and fight with them with their friends and everything over here. You got to do it. So he put him in the school, and at Christmas time he said, Rob, he's good. He's good. He's going to be a good one. He only needs to come here for 1 year because he's very advanced. And then Wesley Ward took him under his wing and took him to Keeneland, won some races in Canada, and then he rode for him in Florida. He was the fourth leading rider in Florida. And, you know, and the rest is history. So I'm really proud of him, really proud of him. It's great for him to come to his hometown of Saratoga and with his friends, and gives him a lot of bragging rights, you know, when we go out to dinner. So I get free cups of coffee everywhere I go. So it's great.
Yeah, there's some perks, right?
Yeah, there is. They don't remember who I am. Robbie who? What? Oh, you know Dylan? I said, yeah, I know Dylan. I know him. Oh, man, let me buy you a cup of coffee.
Well, the first year, I remember seeing a kid walk across Nelson Avenue on a horse of Wesley Ward's, and I looked up, and I said, that's Robbie Davis. That's a young Robbie Davis. And I kind of walked over there and realized it was Dylan. Can you see the similarities of your style with his?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, yeah. And he just, it's uncanny how it passed on. I mean, we're exact same size, and he sits there and saves ground, and, you know, he wins the race on the third and fourth best horse all the time. And he just, he's a natural. And Jackie's a natural, and so was Katie. But funny story was, Dylan was come back out of the jockey school, and he's getting ready to ride. He had 5 wins to make before he started the bug. And Jackie had won 2 or 3 races at Aqueduct. And we're on the horse path, and everybody's like, oh, congratulations, Jackie. But it was Dylan. So Dylan come into Barney's crying. And he's like, Dad, I'm not going back out there. I said, what's the problem? What happened? They think I'm Jackie. I said, oh, well, just give him the finger. Just give him the finger. That's what Jackie would do. And he starts, no, he can't do that. And I said, well, then put some eyeliner on and smile at him, you know. Well, they look identical with helmets on, you know. But, yeah, Dylan rides a good race, and he don't need the best horse to win, which is really a plus for a lot of these guys.
Yeah, do you watch your kids ride as a father, or do you watch as a jockey?
Well, at first it took me a while because I was the father, and I would run in the bathroom. I didn't know if I was going to take a crap or throw up, and I'd come back out and Jackie'd be in front, and I'd be like, oh, I'd have to push rewind and see how the hell she done that, because she'd scared the daylights out of me. And then finally I just put it in her hands, in God's hands, because I couldn't watch. But my son, I watch him and I help him, and he also has Mike Migliori, which is Richie Migliori's brother. And so it's a tag team that we do with Dylan, that we help him a little bit. And it's really paid off. It's really paid off.
That must be great pride for you to watch your kids. And you have a son-in-law, Trevor McCarthy, as well. So you basically have 4 kids riding races.
Yeah, I mean, when we go home and that TV goes on and the races, we're jumping from Maryland to Aqueduct to Belmont, you know, to Del Mar or Santa Anita. And then Jackie was riding at night at Penn National. So we really couldn't put the fork down. We just kept whipping all the way all of the afternoon. And just like, she went 2 or 3, we had 2 or 3 a day with us. And, it's exciting. It really keeps it fun.
Take us back to the beginning. You grew up in Idaho, and riding came naturally then. I mean, you kind of riding as a kid, or what was that like?
I started out on dirt bikes on my uncle's gas tank, and he'd give me rides through the mountains, and I'd hang on to that dirt bike and the handlebars, and I raced dirt bikes, and then I raced cars, drag race cars on Saturday, and raced dirt bikes on Sunday, and I couldn't make much money at either one of them. My little trophy, and kind of get a little banged up every weekend, you know, and my friend had a brand new truck, a brand new trailer house, a great big belt buckle, and a tall blonde. And I said, man, this is for me. I said, this guy's doing good. I said, I come home and told my uncle I wanted to be a jockey. I said, he got a brand new truck and everything over here. He said, well, go where you can make some money. If you're going to climb on their back, go to New York, go to California, go where you can really, you know, make a living at it and do well. You can always come back to Idaho and ride quarter horses. So I sailed out of there with 43 tickets, suspended license. I swapped the license plates off my Aunt Bonnie's Volkswagen, and away I went. I went to New York on fictitious plates, no insurance, and no license. But I didn't turn my license in because in case I'd gotten pulled over, I had a license to show them, and it wasn't valid, but it was something to show them. So, and then I won my first race on Comanche Brave, Dominic Del Vecchio. One of the hardest prayers I ever prayed when I come onto Belmont Park, I pulled 6 pounds in the hot box, and I was seeing spots all through the infield. And I was like, God, I know I've asked you for many things, but if you could just let me win this one race, I could tell all my friends I want to race in New York and go back home, you know, with some real bragging rights. And I won that first race, and I won 3 that week. So I'd gotten my check, and it was $3,800. And I said, wow, they made a big mistake here. I said, man, maybe I could skip town and get home. I can get home on this. And my valet, I said, listen, I said, I got dressed, and I thought better of it. I said, I'll get arrested. You know, they'll have me arrested before I get to the Mississippi. I told my valet, I said, listen, they made a mistake on my check. And he's like, well, let me see it. And he folded it out and looking at it. He says, well, it's all there. What did you? I said, no, I only won 3 races. He goes, oh, well, welcome to the Big Apple, Jock. I was like, wow, I kind of like this. This is great because we got $16 to ride and $26 to win in Idaho. Here I got $3,800, you know, in my pocket. And, man, I was rich. But, yeah, and it went from there. And then we came to Saratoga that first year in 82, and I fell in love with Saratoga Springs. It was just like Idaho, and the mountains and the lakes and the best horse racing in the world. I said, this is where I want to live. And we raised our family here. That's a great spot. The best horse racing in the world. Greatest game outdoors.
No doubt. Highlight of your riding career, was a Wagon Limit or Arlington Million what stands out?
You know, a Wagon Limit was the best. He was 30-1. The chief comes out with a suit and tie on and a hat. And he had that kind of high-pitched voice, you know. And I read the form. I'm 30-1. There's lots of speed. He says, well, Doc, what are you going to do? He's asking me, what am I going to do? I said, well, Chief, let's just sit off the speed a little bit and make a little run, get a check. Yeah, that sounds good. We'll get a check. Just sit back there and make one run. That sounds great. It's a $1 million race, you know. You're going to be. So I looked up down the backside. I was 20 lengths back, and I'm counting the horses, and I'm about 7th or 8th. And so I asked the horse just a little bit, and the horse just gave me the finger, and he says, no, this is a 5. He said, we ain't making a move from the 5/8 pole. And I'm going, oh, I'm dead. So I got to the half-mile pole. I passed 2. So I said, oh, good, I'm going to be 5th. I got to the 3/8 pole. I said, oh, good, I'm going to be 4th. And I turned for home. There was 2 in front of me, and they collapsed at the 8th pole. And I said, oh, he's going to like this. This is going to be great. And we won the darn thing, and I come back and said, how's that for a check, Chief? Oh, he started crying, had tears coming down his eyes, and Mr. Shields and his wife there. It was just, it was, it was the greatest feeling ever. If I can just put it in a jar, you know, and save it. It was so much fun. It was a highlight. It was a real highlight. Didn't do it for him, you know, was even so much better because he would scream and yell at you for a cheap claiming race, you know, if you weren't digging in. He'd come back and say, "You're getting a little long in the tooth." I said, "Put me back on that son of a gun. I'll show you." "What? You ride him this time?" And I was just kind of protecting. He wasn't traveling so great, you know. And so I put him back on and we win. But he was... He had his thumb on the pulse, and there's some good horsemen here that do, and it's fun to be around them and watch my kids be able to ride for them, and it's exciting.
Yeah, it's an amazing journey to get out of Idaho and make it in New York.
Yeah, well, you know, last weekend our son got married in the Hamptons, and I'm sitting there, I'm going, well, I went from the trailer park on welfare to the Hamptons in New York to raise my son. And, you know, I named this one Robbie Jr. And you tend to want to spend a little more time with ones you name after yourself. You don't want them to open up the first page of the paper and see them in the police log, you know, your name or something, you know. So he was reading by the time he was three, you know. And he went to Drexel and graduated Drexel University. And we're just so proud of him. And we're proud of all of our kids, you know. They haven't been on the second page of the newspaper yet, knock wood, but we came. It was a long travel, you know, and my wife and I had a lot of fun times raising these kids. And, you know, it takes a good woman to back you and support you and moving around and working every weekend. And that's a hard life, you know. You got to work every weekend, and you sacrifice. And I went to the school PTA meeting, and said, "Mr. Davis, everything's fine, but we got a big problem here." And I said, "Well, what's that?" He says, "Well, your kids have missed 11 Tuesdays in a row." And I said, "Oh, yeah, that's true." She says, "Well, what are we going to do about it?" I said, "Well, ma'am," she was a nun, you know, and I said, ma'am, I put my neck on the line every day, 9 times a day, and when I come home, I say my prayers and my blessings. And every Saturday and Sunday, I miss the ball games. I miss the cheerleading, the wrestling, and the soccer games. But when Tuesday comes, I don't have the heart to take these kids and drop them off at the school. And so I hook up the fishing boat, and we go to the other direction and pack a little lunch, and we go out on the water, or we do something to the bowling alley, or we go do something. "Oh, Mr. Davis, that's so great of you." She says, "You continue to do what you're doing, and just be sure they do their homework on Tuesday, you know." So I said, "No problem." So we work around a little bit. It was great.
Wow, that's the epitome of raising kids on the racetrack, right?
Yeah.
The question of the day, the Fanticipate question of the day, who was your biggest fan when you were riding races?
Oh, my mother. Yeah, my mom, bless her heart. She died a year ago yesterday on the 1st of September, and I'd fly her all over the country, Chicago and Del Mar, and she got to meet Tim Conway, and she was just the backbone of the family. And she was all 4'8", and just full of vinegar and honey, you know. You didn't want to rub her wrong, but she was so much fun. And she always told me, she said, "Don't let nobody tell you can't do it. And if they don't believe in you, tell them to sit back and watch, because you're going to show them." And she was fabulous. You know, we really miss her.
That's Robbie Davis. He showed them.
I told you that was too good not to replay, huh? Fantastic stuff. My thanks to Robbie and to Sean for putting that piece together. Back with more right after this word from the sponsors of that segment, Fanticipate and My Racehorse.
Want to get closer to your favorite stars in racing?
Fanticipate is an online auction platform where fans can bid on unique items from their favorite competitors before the gates even open. Compete with other fans to win items from owners, trainers, and jockeys participating in select Breeders' Cup Challenge Series races and more, and take home a piece of the race. Visit Fanticipate.com for more information and to view our live auctions. Own a piece of the action with Fanticipate.
Experience the thrill of racehorse ownership with My Racehorse Microshares. From the team that brought you Kentucky Derby winner Authentic, My Racehorse offers affordable racehorse ownership for less than $100 with no ongoing fees. My Racehorse features top trainers including Todd Pletcher, Steve Asmussen, Richard Mandela, and more, along with a supercharged mobile app that allows you to purchase shares online. Enjoy insider access to your stable and attend exclusive events. Visit MyRacehorse.com and become an owner today.
And each week, a portion of In the Room, portion of the proceeds from that segment In the Room are donated to the PDJF. If you want to help support PDJF, get in touch with me, Mike at horseracingradio.net, and we'll get you set up with a sponsorship on that segment, In the Room with Sean Clancy, each and every week. Back with more. This is the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment on HRRN.
Mark your calendars for Saturday, October 9th, as the best West Virginia breds in training take to the track for the 35th annual West Virginia Breeders Classics. The night features nine stakes races worth a total of $1 million, headlined by the $300,000 West Virginia Breeders Classic and the $175,000 Kavada Breeders Classic. It all gets started under the Saturday night lights at 7 o'clock Eastern. It's the 35th annual West Virginia Breeders Classics on Saturday, October 9th, here at Hollywood Casino at Charlestown Races.
Watch and wager on world-class racing from Woodbine Racetrack with Thursday, Saturday, and Sunday post times at 1:10 p.m. Eastern and a Friday post time of 4:50 p.m. Eastern. Don't forget, on October 3rd, we have our Breeder Stakes for three-year-olds foaled in Canada and our Grade 3 Ontario Fashion Stakes for fillies and mares. With racing now through December 4th and plenty of weekend stakes, you are not going to want to miss out on the action at Woodbine. For more information on racing and handicapping, visit woodbine.com.
The Adidas Spring Stallion roster is loaded with classic bloodlines and classic performance.
Oh, the classy point of entry would not be denied.
Dynaformer Zaire Point of Entry, a global sire with black type horses in five countries, and the number one sire of grade one performers in his crop. Multiple grade one winner Shaman Ghost, the best son of Ghost Zapper, whose two-year-olds race this year.
And it's going to be won by Shaman Ghost. He has won the Woodward.
Silent Name, the only son of Sunday Silence at Stud in North America, and Canada's champion sire 3 years in a row.
Silent Poet in front of the Neoctic, and this one's for you, Martha. Silent Poets won it.
And the newest addition to the Adina Springs roster, American Guru, from a proven winning family, steeped in tradition, with a strong Mr. Prospector influence on both sides.
But American Guru continues to keep on giving, and American Guru has dominated.
Classic bloodlines, classic performance. Visit AdinaStallions.com.
Gulfstream Park's Flamingo Festival meet is live now through November 21st with live racing Thursday through Sunday. Witness racing on both tapeta and dirt surfaces. Tapeta Racing offers a consistent and gentle racing ground for the thoroughbreds as they charge towards the finish line. Get ready for stakes racing action on October 23rd and 30th and November 5th and 6th. For schedules, dining reservations, or tips and analysis, visit GulfstreamPark.com.
This is trainer Chad Brown, and you're listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment.
Just about 10 minutes away from this week's edition of I Ask, They Answer with Dale Romans and Tim Wilkin. Promises to be a good one. We have five different topics that we're going to try to get through in that 20-minute segment. And each week, Dale and Tim share their thoughts, their opinions on various topics. We're going to talk about Bob Baffert, his decision to scratch Medina Spirit from the Pennsylvania Derby today. After the draw on Monday, they weren't worried about the post position. And then on Tuesday, when they scratched Medina Spirit, Bob said, "I don't like the way he drew." So not sure what gives there, but hopefully Dale and Tim can clear up exactly what might be going through the mind of Bob Baffert and the connections of Medina Spirit. But time now to take you on a weekly stroll through racing history. And to do that, we join my good friend, Kurt Becker.
Hello, I'm Kurt Becker. Thanks for joining me as I take another stroll through racing history, presented by Lane's End and Keeneland. Later today, Parks Racing near Philadelphia will present the Gallant Bob Stakes, a Grade 2 sprint for three-year-olds at a distance of 6 furlongs for a purse of $300,000. It's a race which pays tribute to the first Pennsylvania-based thoroughbred ever to be named an Eclipse champion. No one would deny that the last 25 to 30 years have produced some tremendous Pennsylvania-bred racehorses. Names like Stormcat, Gopher Wand, and Smarty Jones come to mind. But Gallant Bob does not belong in that category. For starters, his roots were more blue-collar than blue-blooded. And for that matter, he was not a Pennsylvania bred. Foaled in the spring of 1972, Gallant Bob was a Kentucky-bred son of Gallant Romeo who found his way to the Keystone State when he was just 6 months old. That's because Pennsylvania businessman Robert Bob Horton bought him at the Keeneland Sales as a weanling in November of 1972. At the time, Pennsylvania was still in its infancy as a thoroughbred racing state. Liberty Bell Park had opened in 1969 near Philadelphia in an attempt to help stop the flow of Pennsylvania residents who for years had been crossing the Ben Franklin Bridge to bet on parimutuel horse racing in New Jersey. And so Gallant Bob came to Liberty Bell to make his debut as a thoroughbred racehorse in July of 1974. He was entered in a 5.5 furlong race for two-year-olds with a claiming price of $12,500. It was a nondescript race full of lightly regarded, unproven young racing prospects. But Gallant Bob managed to generate some excitement that day, winning his career debut and lighting up the tote board by paying $94 on a $2 mutual ticket. A few weeks later, on August 31st, 1974, the $100,000 Kindergarten Stakes went to the post for what would be the final thoroughbred stakes ever held at Liberty Bell. A brand new racing facility, boasting a price tag of $30 million, was opening later that fall just down the road, and it would be called Keystone Racetrack. And so the Kindergarten Stakes brought down the curtain at Liberty Bell, and it produced a stretch battle between Gallant Bob and a colt named Master Derby. Gallant Bob set the pace that day, blazing an opening quarter in 21 3/5 seconds and an opening half mile in 44 4. Master Derby came running late, catching the pace setter in the shadow of the wire to prevail by a half length. But even in defeat, Gallant Bob had caught the attention of turf rider Russ Harris of the Philadelphia Inquirer, who referred to Gallant Bob's torrid pace as, quote, the most dazzling display of speed by a two-year-old ever at Liberty Bell, end quote. Both Gallant Bob and Master Derby would enjoy considerable success as three-year-olds in 1975. Master Derby would distinguish himself as the winner of the Preakness Stakes, and Gallant Bob would bypass the Triple Crown season to focus on sprint races in a campaign which began on New Year's Day and did not end until the final week of December. Gallant Bob loved Keystone, winning 5 stakes at the track that year. But he would also win stakes races at 6 other racing facilities, with jockey Jerry Galatano aboard for trainer Joe Marquette. Gallant Bob rolled to 13 stakes victories in 17 outings, making him only the 4th thoroughbred in history to win as many as 13 stakes races in a single season. He was the first to do so since Citation in 1948, with the others being Hamburg and Hindu, who had done their running in the 19th century. The season concluded with Gallant Bob being named the Eclipse Champion Sprinter of 1975. Gallant Bob would win the Pominock Handicap at Aqueduct in January of 1976 for his 9th consecutive stakes victory before suffering a 4-race winless streak. He bounced back with a win at Keeneland in April in the Phoenix Stakes, tying the track record at 6 furlongs in 108-2. But winning proved more difficult thereafter. Gallant Bob continued racing through December of 1979, when the gelding concluded his career with a record of 23 wins in 77 starts for earnings of $489,000. Today, Gallant Bob will be remembered once again with the running of the annual stakes race named in his honor. The people of Philadelphia and the management and staff of Parks Racing have never forgotten the Kentucky-bred gelding who became the first Eclipse Award winner ever based in Pennsylvania. Please join me again next week as I take another stroll through racing history, presented by Lane's End and Keeneland. For HRRN, I'm Kurt Becker.
What a fantastic story. Kurt just does an incredible job. He has such a gift for putting those stories together, and that one certainly no exception. My thanks to Lane Zen and Keeneland for their support of that segment each and every week here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. When I come back, I will welcome in trainer Dale Romans, turf writer Tim Wilkin for this week's edition of I Ask, They Answer. It promises to be a good one. This is the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment on HRRN.
The richest meet in Oak Lawn's history begins Friday, December 3rd through Sunday, May 8th. The 66-day meet will offer more than $45 million in purses with 36 stakes races totaling $12.3 million. And all allowance races are now worth $100,000. Oak Lawn boasts the richest Triple Crown prep series in the country, highlighted by the $1 million Rebel on Friday, February 26th, and the Grade 1 Arkansas Derby Saturday, April 2nd, now offering a purse of $1.25 million. Learn more at oaklawn.com.
Undefeated Grade 1 winner Mastery was a multiple graded stakes winner at two, including this victory in the Los Alamitos Cash Call Futurity. At three, he sizzled in the San Felipe Stakes. Now his progeny are bringing top dollar in the sales ring.
$450,000.
Internet buys $510,000. Thank you.
An exciting young stallion, Mastery, standing at Claiborne Farm.
Live racing is back at Churchill Downs September 16th through October 3rd. With the same strong purses back from summer and four new stakes races, you won't want to miss live racing at Churchill Downs. With the win in your end Grade 3 Iroquois a Derby points race and Grade 3 Pocahontas an Oaks points race on September 18th, plus the new Bourbon Trail, Louisville Thoroughbred Society, Harrods Creek, and Seneca Stakes, this September meet is sure to be full of excitement. For more racing information and to get your tickets today, visit churchilldowns.com.
A five-time graded stakes winning earner of almost $3 million, Airdrie Studs Collected is the all-time leading earner by City Zip. Winner of the Grade 1 Pacific Classic over Arrogate, Collected also romped by 14 lengths in the Grade 3 Precisionist Stakes, defeating Accelerate. Collected bred full books of quality mares in his first two seasons, and his first crop yearlings will be unveiled at public auction later this summer. Collected stands at Airdrie Stud for 17,500 stands and nurses. Think about it.
The thrill of thoroughbred racing is back at Laurel Park. The brand new dirt surface and world-class turf course are ready for the races. Spend an afternoon dining with someone special at your choice of restaurants. Grab a bite with friends at the food court or relax and enjoy racing action from around the world in the sports bar. Laurel Park has it all. The beer is cold, the action is hot, and the horses are fast. Nothing beats a day at the track. Live racing Thursday through Sunday, post time, 12:40 p.m.
Hi, this is Doug O'Neill. My favorite radio show is the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment.
Medina Spirit and Mangalone are stride for stride. Hot Rod Charlie and Essential Quality closing on the outside. The four of them come into the final furlong. Mangalone fighting for the front. Medina Spirit battles on. Hot Rod Charlie on the outside. Essential Quality on the far outside. The four of them coming to the finish in the Kentucky Derby. Here's the wire. Bob Beveridge does it again. Medina Spirit has won the Kentucky Derby. Mangalone was second. Hot Rod Charlie was third. Essential Quality was fourth. 2:01:02 the final time. Bob Baffert stands alone with seven Derby wins.
Well, Bob Baffert did it. That is still up for debate. There is some controversy still surrounding Medina Spirit, to say the least. He returned to the races last month and won the Shared Belief at Del Mar, and was entered in today's Grade 1 Pennsylvania Derby. However, on Tuesday, trainer Bob Baffert announced he would scratch and instead point for the Awesome Again Stakes against older horses on October 2nd, next weekend at Santa Anita. And with that, I welcome you to this week's edition of I Ask, They Answer. I am Mike Penna, and I'm joined now by trainer Dale Romans and turf writer Tim Wilkin. And guys, let's start there, and I'm hoping that maybe you can clear this up a little bit. When entries were taken on Monday, Medina Spirit drew post 9, right next to his top rivals, Hot Rod Charlie and Midnight Bourbon. At that time, Bob Baffert was quoted as saying, "Once they draw, we don't worry about it. The break is important no matter what post they have." Then on Tuesday, one day later, Baffert announced the scratch of Medina Spirit, saying, I want to do what's best for the horse. I don't like the way he drew. So, Dale, I'll start with you. What gives?
Well, it's not the first time Bob's contradicted himself on statements here lately. But, you know, I don't like being on the outside or the inside in a race because it seems like the horse always breaks that open area. But with that being said, good horses, great horses that have run as many times as Medina Spirits, that really doesn't matter. Truth is, he wanted to stay at home where it was going to be easier to keep the horse at home, run him out of his backyard, and I don't blame him for that, but might as well just step up and say it.
Timmy?
Yeah, I'm actually sitting here in Pennsylvania, at Parks, and kind of crazy out here. The mummers are running around, getting ready for the big day, and it's for the Parks people down here. During the week, I talked to Bob. Bob actually called me when he, the day after the draw. Because when I talked to him on Monday, right after the draw, he just didn't sound like he was real happy. He was at Keeneland. Didn't sound like he was real happy with the draw. And I've known him long enough that I would say that I think that I don't know if he thought the bear could win this race with all the others. I don't know if he thought he got enough out of the shared belief. So I think he might, like they said, he wants to stay home. He's going to run in the winning year in. And I guess if he wins the Austin again, it's a winning year in. He's got to let him go in the Breeders' Cup, right?
Yeah, where does that go, Dale? Are they're still debating whether they're going to allow Bob Baffert to even run in the Breeders' Cup?
Well, you know, it's going to be interesting to see what happens with this case in New York. And history is that if a person's ruled off at one track, they're ruled off at all racetracks. So that's why it's important for Bob, at least, to win this thing in New York or keep it going for as long as he can, because it's not just a matter of New York ruling him off. If that gets upheld, then he won't be able to run anywhere. I don't know. Everything around Baffert right now is controversial and up in the air.
All right.
With
well,
that being said, I consider him a friend, and I hope the best for him.
Timmy, go ahead.
I love dealing with Bob. He's always been great with me. I mean, I love dealing with Bob. He's always been great. And I'm wondering, you know, all these people that are on the Breeders' board, I mean, he trains for a bunch of them, too. How's that going to
Yeah, I can't see him keeping him out of the Breeders' Cup if nothing's done in New York yet, which it probably won't be done by then. I mean, and nobody should. He hasn't been proven guilty of anything. I don't think he should have been kicked off Churchill properties. I don't think anything should have been. No penalty should be in place until a man has his time, his day in court, to plead his side. So, and if he goes and he's proven to be wrong, go on with it.
I thought that Churchill really jumped the gun Churchill jumped the gun when they suspended him for 2 years. I mean, he's done a lot for that track. I mean, you got to give the guy the benefit of the doubt until everything is everything comes out, don't you? I mean, isn't there a due process? Isn't that something that should happen?
That's always been my theory. I mean, I've been vocal about that. I'm not defending Bob. I'm not defending a bad test, but I will defend his right to have due process and at least get to tell his side of the story.
Dale's What's coming that? At it from a trainer perspective too, right? So, Dale, this could happen to any trainer in any race any day of the week. Just so happened that this was the race, the Kentucky Derby, that this occurred.
That's my problem with the whole thing. I mean, it could happen to me tomorrow. If they decide they don't like you, they don't like something you said in the press, and they just bar you from the racetrack. And you're dealing with multi-million-dollar businesses here. This is not mom-and-pop stuff that they can just yank away from you because they decided they don't like you before you've even got to have your day in court. Timmy, where are you? All that noise in the background.
I'm at Parks.
Are you at the track kitchen? You having breakfast?
Yeah, you need to find a quieter spot.
I'm trying. I've been walking all over this track, and there's no... Everybody's
walk outside.
I've got to tell everyone to shut up.
Right, tell them to quiet down. We're trying to put a show on here.
These trucks going around.
Nice.
All right.
You only know we're going to do this for a week, Tim.
I need you to get out here and tell them what to do.
All right.
Here we go. We're going to move on to topic number two.
I'm going to hide in the bathroom.
Right.
There you go. Wherever you got to be, Timmy, we'll move on to topic number two here. Okay, over the past 10 years, I went back and looked this up. You've had 4 3-year-olds who have won the Breeders' Cup Classic. You had Authentic, Arrowgate, American Pharoah, and Bayern. Two of them competed in the Travers during their summer campaigns. You had one who went in the Haskell and one in the Pennsylvania Derby. So I'm going to ask you guys, Which of these big three races is the best Breeders' Cup prep race? And Timmy, let's start with you.
Byron also ran. He ran in the Travers and Fish the favorite, I believe. I'm going to be partial, of course, because I'm going to say Travers, because I'm a Saratoga guy. Travers has always been the best. This thing I think is better for the Breeders' Cup, in my opinion. Dale, you're a trainer. You know more than me, but from a Breeders' standpoint, I'm thinking that the Travers is the better race for horses heading to the Breeders' Cup, because after you run in that race, you can run one more time. Or go to the Pennsylvania Derby, you're probably pretty much not going to run again. And the Haskell thing is just way too early. So my thing would be the Travers.
I would agree with you, Timmy. I think if you run, I like the pattern running the Haskell Travers, then just like American Pharoah did. You go Haskell, Travers, and then on to the Breeders' Cup. If you run in the Pennsylvania Derby, you don't have an option of running back, and you're going to have a big gap between your two previous races. And if you run in the Haskell, you can't wait all the way till the Breeders' Cup. But if you run in the Travers, you've got options. You've still got time enough. If you think your horse needs to run one more time, you can find a spot. If you want to just train into the race like American Pharoah did, you can do that. So yeah, you'd have to say the best one set by itself, not looking at patterns, would have to be the Travers.
Yeah, well, and history proves that too. Two of the 4 3-year-olds to win the Classic came from the Travers, so that the history proves itself there too. All right, move on. Topic number three. This one is interesting to me. I want to make sure we get to it. This past week, former NYRA president and CEO Charlie Hayward wrote an article that appeared on his Thoroughbred Racing commentary, and the title of his article was "Very Few Are Aware Just How Much Cheating There Is in Racing. Let's Fix It Now Before We Lose It." And Hayward makes reference to the March 9th article, which appeared on the Blood Horse, titled "One Year After the Indictments, Cheaters Still Prosper." All right, Dale, I'll start with you. Do you agree or disagree that racing failed to make significant and impactful changes in this area over the past year or so?
They always get caught in the end. If you can't stay ahead of, but and who knows what's going on there? I was pretty naive when all the stuff went down with the FBI. I didn't think there was that much stuff going on, but I hear that there's more indictments to come and there's more people going to be collected. It's all hearsay, but you know what? It doesn't matter what business it is. When there's a lot of money on the table, someone's trying to take an edge, and the edge usually starts before you know the police can come along and catch it. You don't know what you're looking for until it gets there.
So how does the sport of racing combat that?
Well, I think they took a huge step in starting this federal board that's going to have some high-powered detectives work and the most sensitive testing. But like I said, the criminals are always ahead of the cops. It's always going to be like that no matter what you're in. But you will get caught eventually. And I think that getting caught in this bus, it makes it, everybody says it's a blackout of racing. Well, I think it's not a blackout of racing because it proves that we're working hard to catch them. And that a lot of them got caught, and the more of them to come to get caught, will get caught. And see, if nobody ever got caught doing anything, then you would think they're getting away with something and nobody's working at it. I think the industry's doing a lot, and it's come a long ways in testing and how to oversee and track what medications end up on the backside and inside of horses. And there's a big difference, too, people need to realize. It gets muddled sometimes about true therapeutic medications that everyone can use that are legal to have on a horse and actual cheating for medications that have no purpose of helping a horse be healthier. And those are the ones we need to look for now. There's the blood dopings and that kind of stuff. But whether it's bicycling, NFL, NBA, Major League Baseball, everyone's always looking for an edge, and we need to just work hard to make sure that everything's even and we all play on the same field.
Everything he said is right. I'm looking at some of these cases that have come up, and because of the appeal process, they can go right back to work. It's happened. And, I mean, I think if someone ruled someone off, they should be off. That's the decision. Why are they allowed to come back after doing something? That's kind of a black eye with racing, and almost like, well, yeah, I could do something wrong, I'm going to go back to train tomorrow. I just don't understand why it takes so long with the appeal process. And again, I'm not a lawyer. I never want to be a lawyer. I'd be a bad lawyer. I just don't understand why it takes so long for something to happen.
Well, the reason it takes so long is to make sure that you got it right and you don't have an innocent person that's losing their business. It's just so you can't have it both ways. We both just agreed that Baffert deserves due process, as everyone does. And even though it might seem like a long time in the big picture, horse racing, notice sport in America, it's really not that long a time, and they end up being gone after their appeals are exhausted.
But the example I'm going to bring up, Dale, is the Linda Rice situation in New York. It was a 5-0. When they had the long trial, it came out with a ruling, I think it was 5-0, in favor of suspending her for, what was it, 3 years, take away her license, but then she's still training.
Her suspension will.
That's able to happen.
Because it's in America, and you get the right to have fresh set of eyes looking at anybody's case. But at the end of the day, her 3 years are coming, and she knows it, and it may not be back after the end of those 3 years. So it's not – I believe in appeals process. I believe in having fresh eyes look at things. And but at the end of the day, you're going to do your time if you did wrong.
All right, well, there you go. That is topic number three. Let's move on to the fourth topic here. I knew that would be a good one. Topic number four, Wednesday it was announced that two-time Eclipse champion Montemoy Girl was going to be retired from racing after sustaining an injury in her gallop on Tuesday morning. She retires with 14 wins from 17 career starts and earnings of more than $4.7 million. Exactly half of her wins, seven, came in grade ones. Our sport has been blessed with some incredible fillies over the years. How is history going to remember Montemoy Girl? Timmy, let's go with you.
I think you'd have to be insane if you didn't think that she's one of the best distaffers of all time. I mean, she won the Breeders' Cup this only other, I believe there's three others, Royal Delta, Beholder, Viacol, that on that. I mean, she was a horse that always showed up. She was a horse that had a lot of charisma. I mean, she was toppler. She checked every box. I mean, I think that she's going to go down. I mean, she'll be in the Hall of Fame, obviously. And, you know, it's good that she's retired.
In my opinion, great mare, handled perfectly by Brad, had a great, great career. I just can't put her in the same class with Zenyatta or Steve's filly. I can't think of her name right now. Help me here,
Rachel Alexander.
Rachel Alexander. It's hard for me to put her in the class with those two. In my lifetime is watching mares run. Those two stand out head and shoulders above the rest. But great mare, handled perfectly, deserves a Hall of Fame.
Yeah, no doubt she'll be there one day. Again, $4.7 million in earnings, 14 of 17 lifetime. She was simply sensational. All right, one final question. And Timmy, I know you're having some connectivity issues, so not sure how much you can chime in on this one, but I'll start with you first, that it is National Quesadilla Day, and it is also National Ghost Hunters Day today. So two opposite ends of the spectrum. I'm going to ask you guys, which of these would you be most excited to participate in, National Quesadilla Day or National Ghost Hunters Day? Timmy, what do you think?
That's a slam dunk for me, National Ghost Hunter Day, because I want some.
Oh, come on now.
You believe me?
No.
You saw a ghost?
I saw a ghost. It was in my house.
What did it look like?
Yes, I did. I saw a ghost in my house. It was a white specter wearing a suit. My cat was going crazy, came out in the living room, and there it was. I want to go hunt for some ghosts. I don't care about quesadillas. I want to hunt for some ghosts.
I want to go ghost hunting to build up an appetite. I want to go ghost hunting, build up my appetite, and eat a bunch of quesadilla.
How many quesadilla do you think you can put down in one sitting, Dale?
I don't know, but I'd like to have a contest. I like a good quesadilla. But what I really want is whatever Timmy was on when he saw that ghost.
I'll tell this story next time. I don't think we have enough time now. This is a good long story, man. It's true.
Yeah,
I might be a ghost hunter myself.
Right. Well, that sounds like the ghost was hunting you.
He never came back, though. Maybe it was a ghost that was ticked off about my picks. I don't know. But he was there.
All right. Good All right, stuff. On that you upped note, your game this week. Better questions. Thank you.
Hey, later, Dale. Next week, I asked, they answered Dale Romans and Tim Wilkin. Timmy, appreciate it, my friend.
Thank you, Mike. It's always a pleasure.
All right, we'll talk next week. All right, there you go. I ask, they answer. Dale Romans, Tim Wilkin. We'll get those connectivity issues smoothed out a little bit. Timmy was breaking up a little bit today. Last week it was Dale. This week it's Timmy. Yin and yang. We'll balance those things out. We'll get them straightened out for you. But that segment's going to be a lot of fun as we continue to build it and grow it and come up with some different angles and topics. I think you're really going to continue to enjoy it. And, you know, look, some great comments there. I know you could hear Dale a little bit better than Timmy, but some great comments on the situation involving Bob Baffert, number one, and involving racing in general and having the sport do enough and make significant and impactful changes in light of what's happened over the last years in the indictments of different trainers that we've seen in the sport. And Dale came with the opinion that it's not a black eye for horse racing, that it's more of a positive. He spun it the other way, saying that, hey, we're working diligently to catch those who aren't playing by the rules, those who are cheating, those who are using illegal substances. I thought that was an interesting take from a guy that's in that position, right? Think about that. Dale is in that position, so he should know, and he feels as if it's more of a positive, that racing is indeed going after these people who aren't doing things, who are trying to get an edge. But he also was very quick to make a point that the criminals are always ahead of the cops and that there are always going to be people working on new ways to get around the system. And that's the question I have is, how does racing move forward from that? If that's the case, you know, we see it in other sports too. If that's the case that people are looking to get an edge and they're doing things that using substances that can't be tested for, that we don't have a test for currently, where do we go? How does racing combat that? And that will be a question that we'll have to debate later on in this particular segment. I ask, they answer. Again, you can catch it every single Saturday. If you missed it, head back to our website. Podcast replay is available at horseracingradio.net after every show. I'm back to wrap it up after this. This is the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
And they're into the stretch with Spunderun, the wonder catch coming to the eighth pole. Spunderun drifting out with the lead. Blue Chipper on the inside is second. Omaha Beach has made his way up into third, but Spunderun has run away. Herod Ortiz and Spunderun, the real deal in the dirt mile. They won it by 3.5 lengths.
Gainesway Stallion Spunderun. In the Grade 1 Breeders' Cup Dirt Mile, he defeated a loaded field that included multiple Grade 1 winners, Omaha Beach and Improbable. His brilliant speed figures were among the fastest of any 3-year-old at a mile or more, while earning multiple triple-digit buyers up to 110 and running a zero on the thoroughgrass 5 times. Spun to Run hails from the legendary Danzig sire line, a multiple graded stakes winner, millionaire, and Breeders' Cup champion. Great milers make great stallions. Spun to Run, standing at Gainesway.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence educating and developing industry leaders for over 33 years. Classes are taught by industry experts in the state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
I'm Naheem Hines, professional football player for the Indianapolis Colts. Becoming a running back was no easy task for me, but it's nothing compared to what my amazing mom faces every day. My mom was diagnosed with muscular dystrophy when I was 14 years old, yet she's always there for me, every step of the way, despite her own battles. And the Muscular Dystrophy Association is there for my mom. At their 150 care centers across the U.S., MDA is the leading organization in research and care for kids and adults with muscular dystrophy, ALS, and related neuromuscular diseases. Their research is helping find cures and save lives. Watching my mom go through her daily struggles and the care she receives from MDA has made me determined to help find a cure for neuromuscular disease. That is why I support MDA, and that's why I'm so grateful to others who do too. Join me and learn more at helpmda.org today.
Hi, this is jockey Brian Hernandez. For me, there's no bigger thrill than crossing the finish line in front, and nobody captures the excitement of our sport like Horse Racing Radio Network. Each week, HRRN brings you exclusive talk shows, podcasts, and in-depth conversations with the biggest names in racing, jockeys, trainers, owners, and more. Plus, HRRN is committed to helping disabled riders through their support of the PDJF. So climb aboard a winner today by visiting horseracingradio.net.
Hi, this is jockey John Court. You're listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment.
Don't forget, you can check out Blood Horse in so many ways now, including the Blood Horse website at bloodhorse.com. And when you're there, you can sign up for Blood Horse Plus. It's all there. Go to bloodhorse.com today to read headlines and to find out more about the new Blood Horse Plus. All right, well, it's been a busy program. My thanks to all of our guests who have made this one possible. Kicked it off with Brandon Greer going down the road to the Breeders' Cup, talking about Town Cruise and that upset win in last weekend's Rico Woodbine Mile at Woodbine. Rob Attras was with me to talk about Maracuja in today's Grade 1 Cotillion. And then Eric Hamelbeck, the CEO of the National HBPA, stopped by looking ahead to Claiming Crown in December. Patrick O'Neill talking about Hot Rod Charlie. Dermot Ryan, Farm Manager of the Year at Ashford Stud, Coolmore America. Dermot was with me at 9:40. That was a really insightful conversation. And then In the Room with Sean Clancy. My thanks to Robbie Davis for joining him. That special replay came your way at 10 o'clock Eastern. And Kurt Becker's Stroll Through Racing History. And, of course, Dale Romans and Tim Wilkins just a few minutes ago with I Ask, They Answer. That segment coming back again next week as the final segment here in the program on the Equine Forum. Poll question today. I asked you who you think is going to win today's Pennsylvania Derby, Hot Rod Charlie, Midnight Bourbon, or other, and 68% of the vote coming in for the morning line favorite, Hot Rod Charlie, saying he will get the victory and maybe not be taken down this time because of interference. Lots of intrigue around Speaker's Corner. That's what Richard chimes in and says. American Revolution gets a vote from Dennis. Can't resist. Can't go against Hot Rod Charlie today, but I also expect good things from Keep Me In Mind. Now you don't have to anymore. Keep Me In Mind is now out of today's race that was announced yesterday. All right, if you missed any portion, head over to our website. Check out the replay at horseracingradio.net. Follow us on social media at HRN on Twitter, Horse Racing Radio Network on Facebook. My thanks to my producer, Lee Delapina, in our Lexington studio, and to Chauncey for handling all of our social media. I'm Mike Penna. Thanks for listening. Go Steelers, bring on the Bungles. We day.